Beloved Book One, when Hayakujo first arrived at Jiangxi to pay his respects to Mao Tzu, Mao Tzu inquired, "From where have you come?" "From the great cloud monastery at Yuchao," answered Hayakujo. "And what do you hope to gain by coming here?" asked Mao Tzu. Hayakujo replied, "I have come seeking the Buddha Dharma." To this, Mao Tzu replied, "Instead of looking to the treasure house, which is your very own, you have left home and gone wandering far away. What for? I have absolutely nothing here at all. What is this Buddha Dharma that you seek?" Whereupon Hayakujo prostrated himself and asked, "Please tell me to what you alluded when you spoke of a treasure house of my very own." Mao Tzu replied, "That which asked the question is your treasure house. It contains absolutely everything you need and lacks nothing at all. It is there for you to use freely. So why this vain search for something outside yourself?" No sooner were these words spoken than Hayakujo received a great illumination and recognized his own no mind. Beside himself with joy, he bowed in deep gratitude. Hayakujo spent the next 6 years in attendance upon Mao Tzu, but as Tao Chi, his first teacher, was growing old, he wanted to return to look after him. Before Hayakujo left Mao Tzu, he went to pay his final tribute to him. Seeing him coming, Mao Tzu raised his horse whisk straight up. Hayakujo asked, "Are you in the use of it or apart from the use?" Mao Tzu hung the horse whisk on the corner of his chair. After a minute or so, he asked Hayakujo, "Henceforward, how do you open those two leaves of your mouth to work for others?" At this, Hayakujo took the horse whisk and raised it straight up. Mao Tzu said, "Are you in the use of it or apart from it?" Hayakujo hung the horse whisk on the corner of the chair. Just at that moment, a great roar, like hundreds of thunderbolts falling, rained on Hayakujo's head. Mao Tzu had given a shout, which, it is said, deafened Hayakujo for 3 days.
Manisha, before I speak on the sutras of Hayakujo, I have to say a few words as a preface. Hayakujo was the direct heir of Mao Tzu and became most well known for his establishment of the first truly Zen monasteries and his treatise on sudden enlightenment. To understand Hayakujo, The first thing is to understand that enlightenment can only be sudden. Preparation can be gradual, but the illumination is going to be sudden. You can prepare the ground for the seeds, but the sprouts will come suddenly one day morning. They don't come gradually. Existence believes in suddenness. Nothing is gradual here, although everything appears to be gradual. That is our illusion. Science used to think in the past that everything is gradual. A child is gradually becoming younger, the young man gradually is becoming older. Now that is not the case. Because of Albert Einstein and his discoveries about atomic energy, he himself was puzzled for the first time when he saw that the particles of atom don't go from one place to another place the way you go from your house to the market. They simply jump, and their jump is so tremendous that he had to find a new word for it, quanta. Quantum jump. It means the particle was in one place, A, and then suddenly you see it in another place, B. The path between has never been traveled. A strange jump that you cannot see the particle between the two points, that gave him an idea that in existence everything is jumping. Just because the jump is so subtle that you cannot see it, you are jumping every moment towards old age. It is not a gradual thing. It is happening every moment you are older. And there is no way that you can find to rest in between the jump. The jumps are so close, but you can prepare. And particularly for enlightenment, which is the ultimate quantum leap, you can meditate, you can go as deep as you can find your center, and the moment you find your center, suddenly there will be a jump, as if out of nowhere the Buddha has appeared. A Buddha of pure flames. this appearance is not going to be gradual, not partial. Hayakujo's great contribution was the sudden enlightenment, because it is so illogical. If you go from here to the market, you have to go not like the monkey god of Hindus, flying in the sky, carrying a mountain, jumping from one mountain to another mountain. You will have to go foot by foot. You will have to move gradually. You cannot simply disappear from Buddha auditorium and find yourself in the MG marketplace. Because in our actual life we never come across anything sudden. You never see a bud of rose becoming suddenly a flower. It opens gradually. In the morning it was bud, in the evening it becomes the flower. Because of continuous experience of gradualness, there was the major masters of Zen who belonged to the gradual school. To them it was absolutely absurd that you can become a Buddha instantaneously, just now. Everything needs time. If you want to prepare a house, a garden, a painting, a poetry, it will take time. There is only one thing that does not take time, because it is beyond time. That is your Buddhahood. You simply jump out of time and you find yourself as you have been always and will be always, your intrinsic nature. Hayakujo introduced another thing, Zen monasteries. Before him, there were Zen temples. Small groups of people living in those temples, meditating, reading scriptures. But he introduced a new thing, the monastery, where people were absolutely devoted to a single pointed goal, to become the Buddha. No scriptures, no rituals, the whole energy has to be poured into a single direction to discover your intrinsic nature. And why monasteries? Because when there are thousands of people together going into the unknown, it is easier for you. Because you know, although you are going alone in your own space, thousands of others are also going in the same space on their own. You are not absolutely alone. Secondly, a monastery creates a certain atmosphere. That was the greatest contribution of Hayakujo. A monastery is a climate. Its every fiber, every wave, every leaf of the trees is soaked with only one longing, a great urgency to become the Buddha. And when 10,000 people for years continuously go on working, it creates an energy field. In that energy field, you can be caught and you can easily slip out of your mind. Alone, it is a little difficult. It can happen, it has happened alone too, but that is not the rule. Hayakujo's great insight of introducing monasteries simply means he is introducing an energy field which is not visible to you. When 10,000 sannyasins here enter into their inner being, in a way they are alone, but in a way 10,000 people are with them. The experiment is not being done in their cells alone, but in the open under the sky with thousands of other people on the same track, creating vibrations, ripples of energy, not to become a Buddha in such a climate, you will have to struggle against the whole energy field. You will have to swim upstream. But if you want to become a Buddha, you simply go with the stream. A deep let go is possible in an atmosphere. Hayakujo introduced a very scientific concept of monasteries. Born in 724, Hayakujo was also known as Pai Cheng. As a young boy, Hayakujo was taken to a temple by his mother, and upon entering, she bowed to the Buddhist statue. Pointing to the statue, Hayakujo asked his mother, "What is that?" His mother replied, "That is a Buddha." Hayakujo said, "He looks like a man. I want to become a Buddha afterwards." This is a small incident of his childhood has great implications. Buddha never wanted to be in any way extraordinary or special. For the simple reason that if he is special and extraordinary, that will discourage people to become Buddhas, because they know they are ordinary, they are not special, they are not incarnations of God, they don't have divine miraculous powers, they cannot walk on water, they cannot bring a dead Lazarus back to life. Just look at Jesus and Buddha, and you will find Buddha is absolutely ordinary, simple, humble. He can mix with the crowd. Jesus will stand far away, because you cannot walk on water. I have heard only once a bishop has come to the Holy Land of Israel. He had two friends, two old rabbis, and he asked them to take him to all the holy places which were visited by Jesus. So finally they went to Lake Galilee, where Jesus has walked on the water. They took a boat to show him the exact place where he has walked. The bishop asked to the rabbi, Jesus was a Jew. Your last prophet and our first founder. Can you also walk on the water? The rabbi says, easy. The bishop could not believe. He said, I want to see. So one rabbi get out from the left side of the boat and walked on water for a few feet and came back. The bishop could not blink his eyes when he saw the man walking on the water. He said, we used to think that it is Jesus alone, but it seems to be a Jewish quality. The old rabbis asked the bishop that we don't follow Jesus and we don't accept him as our prophet. We have crucified him for this crime, that he was a fraud, propounding himself as our last prophet. But you are a follower of Jesus. Just take the name of Jesus and you try walking on the water. Now it was a great challenge. But the bishop was sitting on the right side. So he got out from the right side and went down in the water and started shouting, help! Help! Those two rabbis took him out, and the older rabbi asked the younger, shall we tell this idiot what is the secret? The secret was that there were stones in the water, just below the water, but they were on the left side, not on the right side. Jesus must have walked on those stones. There is no question about it. I have heard an American Christian very rich man, but very miserly, went to Israel, and everybody is bound to go to the Lake Galilee, which is the holiest place where Jesus lived most of the time. And he asked the boatman, how much it will take me to take to the place where Jesus walked on water? He said, it will take $10. The American said, that explains everything, why Jesus walked on water. $10. Forget about it. And I am not in a mood to walk on water. You will not find in Buddha anything that is not possible for you. He is as human a being as you are. He does not proclaim himself any speciality. That is his grandeur. That is his greatness. This incident, Hayakuju asking his mother, pointing to the statue of Buddha, what is that? The mother said, that is a Buddha. Hayakuju said, he looks like a man. He never tried to look like anything else. He simply wanted to look like man, so that every man can be encouraged that you don't have to walk on waters, you don't have to turn water into whiskey. You can be a Buddha without any difficulty because it is your inner nature. It does not depend on miracles. A religion is not magic. It is a very simple and humble effort to search within yourself the deepest point where you are joined with the universe. That joining point is the Buddha. Hayakuju said, even though he was a small child, he looks like a man. I want to become a Buddha afterwards. If this man could become a Buddha, I am also a man. Right now I am too small, but later on I am going to become a Buddha. Hayakuju became a monk afterwards when he was 20 years old. He joined a monastery at Yu Chau, and his first master was called Tao Chi. Tao Chi gave him his first spiritual name, which was Hui Hai, meaning ocean of wisdom. Hayakuju was not a monk for long before he heard about the great master Matazu and went to him at Jiangxi. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, when Hayakuju first arrived at Jiangxi to pay his respects to Matazu, Matazu inquired From where have you come? These are Zen questions that don't mean what they appear to mean. When he says, from where have you come? He means from where in the eternity? Have you come here? Are you aware of your eternal nature? That you are coming here from utter emptiness? But Hayakujo could not understand at that point. He simply thought that he is asking an ordinary question. He said, from the great cloud monastery at Yu Chau, answered Hayakujo, and what do you hope to gain by coming here? Asked Mataji. Hayakujo replied, I have come seeking the Buddha Dharma. To this Mataji replied, instead of looking to the treasure house, which is your very own, you have left home and gone wandering far away. What for? I have absolutely nothing here at all. What is this Buddha Dharma that you seek? Whereupon Hayakujo prostrated himself and asked, please tell me to what you alluded when you spoke of a treasure house of my very own. Now he has asked the right question. Mataji replied, that which asked the question is your treasure house, your consciousness, your being. Who asked the question? Don't look for the answer. Look from where the question is coming. Then you will have to look inside. The question is coming from your innermost core. That which asks the question is your treasure house. It contains absolutely everything you need and lacks nothing at all. It is there for you to use freely. So why this vain search for something outside yourself? No sooner were these words spoken than Hayakujo received a great illumination and recognized his no mind. Beside himself with joy, he bowed in deep gratitude. Hayakujo spent the next 6 years in attendance upon Mataji. This has stopped happening in the world because we have forgotten the language of suddenness. We believe only in gradual growth. Suddenness seems to be irrational, illogical, impossible. But it is true about everything. If you want anything, it will be gradual. Only there is one exception, that is you. You are already there. So it is only a question of just turning your eyes in. Just looking inwards with absolute urgency, and in a single moment, everything is transformed. When Matazu told him that that which asked the question is your treasure house, he must have immediately looked within from where the question has arisen. It contains absolutely everything you need and lacks nothing. It is there for you to use freely. So why this vain search for something outside yourself? Just as he went down from where the question has arisen, he must have reached to the great illumination instantly. Nowadays, people ask a question to get an answer. About everything it is okay, but about yourself never ask a question. Rather look within from where the question is arising. And in a single moment, the great enlightenment is possible. No sooner were these words spoken than Hayakuju received a great illumination and recognized his own no mind. Beside himself with joy, he bowed in deep gratitude. Hayakuju spent the next 6 years in attendance upon Matazu, but as Tao Chi, his first teacher, was growing old, he wanted to return to look after him. Before Hayakujo left Matazu, he went to pay his final tribute to him. Seeing him coming, Matazu raised his horse whisk straight up. Hayakujo asked, "Are you in the use of it or apart from the use?" Matazu hung the horse whisk on the corner of his chair. After a minute or so, he asked Hayakujo, "Henceforward, how do you open those two leaves of your mouth to work for others?" At this, Hayakujo took the horse whisk and raised it straight up. Matazu said, "Are you in the use of it or apart from it?" Hayakuju hung the horse whisk on the corner of the chair. Just at that moment, a great roar, like hundreds of thunderbolts falling, rain on Hayakuju's head. Matazu had given him a shout, which is, it is said, deafened him for 3 days. For 3 days he could not hear anything else. What has transpired in this dialogue? When Matazu asks, Are you in the use of it or apart from it? The same question both have asked to each other. First, Hayakuju has asked, the meaning should be understood clearly. The meaning is, are you a witness? While you are using it, are you become one with it and forget your witnessing? When Matazu asked, Hayakuju did the same exactly as Matazu has done. He hung the horse whisk on the corner of the chair, showing that I am also a witness, I am no more the horse whisk. I am no object. I am always a subject and a witness. Satisfied, Hayakuju gave a tremendous roar of joy that a disciple has ripened, that a disciple has arrived home, that a disciple's blindness has disappeared. But the roar was such as if hundreds of thunderbolts falling rained on Hayakuju's head. Matazu had given a shout which, it is said, deafened Hayakuju for 3 days. This was a great roar of tremendous joy, of welcoming Hayakuju, that after all, you have arrived. A haiku by Basu, a clap my hands, and with the echoes it begins the dawn, the summer moon. Basu is one of the greatest poets of the world. But he has written only haikus, very symbolic, but very miraculous, very simple, but very mysterious. They are all to be understood through visualization, because Zen does not believe in words. Visualize, and perhaps you may have some understanding. A clap, I clap my hands, and with the echoes in the mountains, it begins the dawn, the summer moon. The summer moon is still hanging, and the sun is going to rise. And I have clapped my hands, and the echoes are still resounding in the mountains. It is just a painting in words. A haiku has to be understood, a painting in words, not only a poetry in words. And it has to be visualized. Just visualize yourself surrounded by mountains and you clap your hands and the mountains go on echoing and the summer moon is still there and the dawn has come. The sun will be arising soon. Why he should write these small haikus? He used to live by the side of a lake, surrounded by mountains, meditating in utter silence. Once in a while he will open his eyes and whatever he will see, he will note down, these haikus are not out of mind. These haikus are reflections in a mirror, in a no mind, in a silent heart. The summer moon, the dawn very close, and he claps his hands and all the mountains resound with echoes. A meditator, according to Basu, will go on searching deep within himself, but that does not mean that he should lose contact with the outside world. Once in a while, he should open his eyes. With all his emptiness, he should mirror the outside world. Those reflections are collected in these haikus. They don't mean anything. They simply depict a picture. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, many disciples have dedicated books to their master out of love and gratitude, but characteristically you have turned tradition on its head by dedicating two of your discourses series to specific disciples. Has any master loved his disciples as much as you seem to love us? Manisha, when I see you all, I don't see you the way you see yourself. I simply see possible Buddhas. No master has dedicated his books to his disciples because no master has that clarity which can see the future in the present, which can see the rose in the seed. I can see. So when I introduce you as Buddhas, it is not symbolic. I mean it. It is not only love, but also respect. My own understanding is unless a master respects the disciple, he does not deserve respect from the disciple. It is a communication. It is a give and take. It is a communion. I am going to dedicate many books because I don't have anything else. Just my words, my experiences, my silences, my songs. I have to dedicate to all those disciples who are keeping me alive. Without you, I won't wake up next morning. Because what I will do? I don't have anything else to do in the world. I have done everything long before. In fact, I have overdone. Now, my life is in your hands. If you want me to be here, I can go on postponing the date of my departure. But the day I see that there is no need for me to postpone anymore, I will tell you to be ready for a great ceremony. But I feel right now my garden is just a nursery. The Buddhas are getting ready to wake up. If you have looked with one eye open, if you have looked with both the eyes open but has taken another turn and pulled their blanket over themselves, it is a question of struggle between me and you. How long you are going to remain hidden in your blankets? Sooner or later you will get tired. You cannot escape me. You have to become a Buddha. Once you are a Buddha, you are absolutely free to go around the world taking the fire, spreading it to all the nooks and corners of the world. My existence has no purpose other than this, that the world should have as many Buddhas as quickly as possible before the politicians manage to commit a global suicide. Only a large quantity of Buddhas around the world can create the atmosphere of peace and love and compassion, and war becomes absolutely irrelevant. I am in a special situation no other Buddha ever has been. This book is dedicated to Anando in spite of her reluctance. She has behaved very unconsciously for these 2 days. First, I am always worried about it. Manisha is not allowed to take a holiday, migraine or no migraine. Because if she is even for one evening absent, and I know she has this trouble of migraine for years, somebody else has to take place. But just to take place for one day is dangerous. The taste of it, then one starts thinking, why I should not continue. It is almost as if you are made the king for one day. It will be difficult for your whole life. So first she freaked out because I still addressed Manisha care of Anando. I could see her face and I could see her response. She did not like it. She wanted to be addressed directly. But I knew it is better to be care of because tomorrow you will be gone. The same trouble has happened with Bimal. For a few days he was sitting with almost tears in his eyes. Once he has tasted the joy of asking questions to me, and then he has to give back the place, his kingdom is taken away. Now, he has come back to his right mind. I did not want to disturb him again, that's why I asked Anando. And I have my own ways of working. In every way, I try to find out some secret which needs to be revealed to the person. Ananda may not be aware that she is never nice to anybody who is nice to her. She becomes nasty. It is her wrong upbringing from the childhood that she has carried. Secondly, she is never happy to receive anything. It needs courage. Perhaps you may not be aware. One loves to give because by giving you are higher. But one has to learn to receive. At least when you are sitting at the feet of your master, you have to learn to receive. It hurts the ego that you are on the receiving end, not on the giving end. I wanted to see how she receives it. She missed the point. First, she freaked out about Manisha's question. Because she thought that Manisha has indicated in it that the horse came a little early and disturbed my speech. Because she was also half the horse. She thought Manisha is trying to bring the question again before the whole assembly. Although there was no question of Manisha bringing it. Manisha was asking something else. She was trying to inquire about me, what was my response of this suddenness. That's why Avirbhava was not disturbed. She was the main horse. Ananda was just the back part. Avirbhava proved to be more alert and conscious. Seeing that the question does not have anything to do with the early coming. In fact, the early coming was very good. It surprised everybody except me. But I am crazy anyway. Nothing surprises me. For 35 years continuously, I have been looking for something to surprise me. Nothing surprises me. Even when a man few years before had thrown a knife at me, it did not surprise me. I just looked at the knife and I continued what I was doing. The man must have been surprised. I did not even report the case. I did not go to the court. The court has to send their representative to ask me just, has such a thing happened? I said it was not much. Just a rotten old knife, and it has not hurt anybody. So fundamentally nothing has happened. Just the sound of the knife falling on the ground. Do you call it a crime? The man said, you are strange. The police is putting the case before the court, and I have come here as a representative of the court because you refused to come. I said, in any way, I would not be there. If the knife has killed me, I would not be there in the court. Now the knife has not killed me, why should I be in the court? The man said, what I am to say to the court? I said, you just write down, I will sign it, that this case really happened. A man threw a knife, I heard the noise, for a moment I stopped speaking so that the hustle with the man and the police officers stops. They took him away. I continued my work. The horse coming as a surprise to everybody. I really enjoyed it. Because the real Kalki, the Hindu white horse, which is going to come within 12 years, the coming 12 years, any time, will not give a warning to you. It will come as suddenly as Avirbhava's horse came. So it was absolutely proper. But Ananda became hurt. But I can understand Avirbhava's hurry. You should just think somebody inside a horse. One wants to get out as quickly as possible. And now she is going to bring elephants and crocodiles, and she will have to be inside them. And obviously, she was in a hurry because the horse may break down in two in the middle. So as quickly as possible, it was perfect performance. But Ananda was not exactly disturbed by it. That was a very superficial thing. She was disturbed because I called Manisha a better reporter, a better recorder than Ramakrishna had Swami Vivekananda or Socrates had Pluto. She became hurt because she is doing so much work . All the new books, she is working hard on them. Their publications, she is in charge of the whole publications and all the constructions that are going in the ashram. Obviously, she thought that Manisha has been praised, and a subtle jealousy, and the female mind. I wanted them to be exposed. And when I said the next day that this new series is going to be dedicated to Ananda, she freaked out even more. So much so that she is suffering from fever, which is absolutely psychological, emotional. Because she was absolutely okay sitting here. And just as she reached her room, she declared that she is having a great cold coming. And she immediately, because that is the time she comes to see me, when I am taking my supper, she comes to see me. She did not come. She really wanted to avoid me. Because I have seen something which she was hiding. She not only did not come to me, she even removed herself from Lao Tzu house to Krishna house as an excuse that she is going to have cold. And she phoned Nirvana that by dedicating the new series to her, Bhagwan is being vicious and he is trying to blackmail me. This way you can see the difference of the disciples that Matazu and Hayakuju had. Even if they were hit on their head, they will bow down and touch the feet of the master. So much has changed in the world of consciousness. Man has fallen so low. For what I should blackmail? But just anger the anger of being care of the anger became almost hysterical. Now whatever she is saying again and again, she has been phoning to Nirvana. That what Bhagwan has said about me. I had not said anything. I waited for this question of Manisha . I cannot take my word back. You know Matazu. He won't take his legs off the track. He allowed the disciple to hurt his legs, but he will not move from his position. This book will be dedicated to Anando with the words, in spite of herself. And I will be dedicating books . I would love to dedicate books to all of you. If time permits and existence allows, each Buddha is going to have a book in his name as a respect and love from the Master. Now it is Anando time. Farmer O'Leary has two prize cows, Daisy and Buttercup. One day he borrows the neighbor's bull and puts it into the field with the cows. The bull does not so much interest in the cows. Seems to be a swami. And soon, Farmer O'Leary gets bored and goes off for his lunch. That afternoon, Father Fumble, the village priest, comes to the farmhouse for tea. So Farmer O'Leary calls his farmhand Sean and tells him to go out to the field and watch the bull. Sean is to let him know if the bull shows any interest in Daisy and Buttercup. Mrs. O'Leary is just pouring Father Fumble a second cup of tea when Sean comes bursting into the room and shouts, "The bull is screwing Daisy." Father Fumble almost chokes. And Farmer O'Leary drags Sean angrily into the kitchen. "Listen, you idiot," snaps O'Leary. "You can't use language like that in front of the priest." Next time say something like, the bull has surprised Desi. Now get back outside. 10 minutes later, Shan comes bursting into the room in a high state of excitement. Farmer O'Leary, he stammers, the bull, but he cannot finish his sentence. Do you mean, says O'Leary, with a knowing look, that the bull has surprised Buttercup? I will say he has surprised Buttercup, shouts Shan. He is still screwing Daisy again. Paddy has been training his horse, Kalki, for the big race. He has been giving it lots of exercise and plenty of good food. But on the day of the race, Paddy is still worried that Kalki will not run fast enough. Just before the horses go to the start, Paddy quietly gives Kalki a couple of pepper pills. Father Murphy, who has been watching this, goes up to Paddy. I hope you are not giving your horse any illegal drugs, says the old priest. Certainly not, Father. I was just giving him a vitamin C, says Paddy, popping one of the pills into his own mouth. Here, try one yourself. Father Murphy swallows one of the pep pills, thinking it is a vitamin, and walks off apparently satisfied. Paddy turns to Samus, who is going to ride Kalki in the race. Don't worry, Samus. You are going to win for sure, says Paddy confidently. Nothing can pass you in this race except me or Father Murphy. George Grove is 50 years old and has spent the best years of his life with a woman whose constant nagging and criticism has driven him mad. Now in poor health and with his business on the verge of collapse, he makes up his mind. He goes to the dining room, gets up on a chair, fastens his tie around the chandelier, and is just about to end it all. At that moment, his wife enters the room. George, she cries in shock at the scene before her, "You idiot! That is your best tie." Chester Cheese is walking through the forest one day with his teenage kid, Charlie. They are enjoying the stroll very much when suddenly Charlie sees a pair of black satin panties lying on the path. "Hey, Dad," exclaims Charlie, "look, a young girl's panties." "Well, son," says Chester in a fatherly voice, I would say those probably belong to an older woman, not a young girl. Come on, Dad, replies Charlie. For sure these are a young girl's panties. I don't think so, Charlie, says Chester stiffly. Just then Father Finger walks up. Excuse me, gentlemen, he says, but I could not help overhearing your discussion. Perhaps I can settle the matter for you. Then Father Finger raises his eyebrows, takes the panties, examines them closely, this way and that way. Well, says Father Finger, popping the panties into his pocket, I don't know which of you is right, but I do know one thing, she is not a member of my church. Okay. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inward with tremendous urgency, as if this is the last moment of your life. Only with this urgency you can reach to the source of your life. And at the source of your life you are a Buddha. From there on opens the whole universe. Your own space unlimited. The Buddha is the door. You have to go beyond it, but first reach to the door. deeper and more deeper. This is a beautiful evening. The rain has stopped just to give you absolute silence. And the silence of 10,000 Buddhas is a tremendous energy field. Don't miss this moment. To make it clear, Ananda, just to watch your body, your mind, separate from you. You are the watcher. In this witnessing, you become the Buddha. You have always been the Buddha. You discover it. So much dust has gathered on it. Remove the dust. Let it become a pure mirror. This is your ultimate nature. The evening has become more juicy and more beautiful. The time has stopped. You are floating in the space like a cloud in absolute freedom. Mm. Vedana, come back. Silently, peacefully, with a grace, and sit down like a Buddha, just for a few moments, recollecting the experience. You have to live this experience 24 hours. Just like breathing, doing anything, you go on continuously breathing. This remembrance of being a Buddha has to become just like an undercurrent. It is always there, whether you are sitting, walking, waking, or sleeping. In action, in inaction, in speaking, in silence. But one thing remains continuously in you. The remembrance of your ultimate nature. Before the celebration, I have to remind Nivedana that I called Ananda, that is the name of your drum. Okay, Manisha. Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?